There's lots of relics left on the moon, footprints, family photos, flags, and one ingeniously designed little experiment invented by an Australian space scientist. It's called the Dust Detector Experiment, the DDE.
It's a highly Australian invention because it only cost about $100.
Dr. Alice Gorman, space archaeologist, explains just how this little experiment worked.
So it's tiny. It's a little box. It has three solar cells and they're connected to a power source. And the idea is if dust movement will affect the amount of solar power generated by the cells. So you can tell what's happening with the dust by the drop in voltage. So very simple, but it wasn't the primary experiment. It was to just provide some additional data for this other one. And it turned out to be incredibly successful. It turned out dust is a huge issue for operation on the moon. And his experiment was one of the first to try and get a handle on that. And variations of his dust detector went up on all of the other Apollo missions too.
Professor Brian O'Brien was working at Rice University in the 60s when they called for experiment proposals to go on the Apollo missions.
The thing that everybody was worried about is the dust that would spread when the astronauts were leaving, when the rocket exhaust would blow up the dust in a great big whoosh sort of thing, only 17 metres away from where the experiments were left. So that's like the opposite side of your backyard. And it's a big rocket. And that would stir up the dust, and the dust would then come onto the experiments, dirty their beautiful gold plating and all that sort of stuff, and they would overheat. And I knew as soon as Buzz reported the dust during the descent that the ascent would provide customers for the dust detector.
When you see footage of Buzz Aldrin deploying the experiments on the moon's surface, you won't see the dust detector. It's tiny and it hitchhiked, bolted on to the 47-kilogram seismometer. Professor Brian O'Brien is a moon dust expert, a very specialised area of study, and he's still working in this field, living in Perth.
The moon is a vacuum. It's also bathed in raw sunlight that's without any shielding atmosphere. So you've got very harsh environment in which rocks have been bombarded for 4,000 million years by very fast meteorites and the like. And so they pulverise the big rocks into little rocks and the little rocks into smaller rocks. And you finally wind up with nanoparticle dust, which is finer than talcum powder, thinner than a human hair. But it's also very sharp. It's little fragments of silicon, but it's been bashed by other ones. But there is no erosion. There's no wind or water to round the edges as they do for sand on a beach. So you've got broken glass, if you like, miniature broken glass, and very sticky for various electrostatic forces and chemical forces, and make it stick to anything it touches. It'll stick to anything and stay stuck.
Bit like a polystyrene ball when you open a bean bag.
Much, much worse, but that sort of thing, yes. Or in the old-fashioned household dust on a record player. Yeah, but this is much worse because it gets inside the cameras, gets inside zippers. And when you get a zipper clogged by dust on the moon, it's irretrievably clogged. You know, that zipper is stuck.
Dust feels like such an earthly, just a nuisance, really, Brian. But yet on the moon, it's not just a nuisance. It's a downright disaster.
It's a disaster mechanically and sort of operationally, but it also can be, and we still don't quite know, a hazard if inhaled. So, as I say, they're still examining how toxic they might be because the dust is also highly chemically reactive. And we don't really understand what chemically they'll do. We can't simulate that on Earth. And so it's not only the size, it's not only the hooks, it's not only the electrostatic properties of the dust, it's also the chemical properties of the dust. And that's, at the moment, fairly little known.
The trouble with moon dust is it's not just sharp, fine electrostatic stickiness and ability to get into every nook and cranny, but we don't know its toxicity. And it's very hard to study it on Earth. There was attempts to make synthetic moon dust, but it's nothing like the real thing. But they did try and collect some to bring back to Earth.
They were put in sample boxes on the moon, and the assumption was made that because it's a vacuum on the moon, they could come back in the vacuum, right? So to do that, they sealed the boxes with very clever seals, very high fidelity seals. But the dust, of course, stopped the seals from closing tightly, and so all the boxes leaked. They knew that there would be a lot of dust on the rocks. There was no way the astronauts, in taking samples, could brush off the dust before they put them in the box. See, this dust is really like McCavity, you know, a fiend in feline shape, a monster of depravity.
But they did have vacuums, but they totally sucked.
They had vacuum systems after a while, and the vacuum systems got full of dust, and he had one bag or two. And besides, where do you empty a vacuum bag full of dust on the moon?
What sort of housekeeping did the astronauts have to do to keep the dust at bay?
Well, they realised that they carried it back into the lunar module. That's the nasty part. They realised that when they went into the command module, they would inevitably take some of it there unless they took precautions. So they glued down everything that they could with Velcro and whatever. And, of course, Velcro, it doesn't work very well in lunar dust. But
why not?
You can, because the dust just gets on it like a gecko. My hook is better than your hook, sort of thing. And I've got many more than you have. On Apollo 12, where they had more time on the moon, they had two EVAs, two extravehicular activities. Their suits were dirtier, so the lunar module was dirtier. And the guy in the command module, when he opened the hatch to look down into the lunar module, says, "You looks like a coal mine down there." Had them stripped naked before he let them into his nice, clean command module.
Professor Brian O'Brien's little dust detectors were turned off in 1977. But how seriously did NASA take the dust detectors' data?
People said, OK, if a big rock can rest on the dust, then it's safe to put a spacecraft, right? It won't sink out of sight. And because of that, they said, so dust, the importance of dust can be dismissed. Now, the first bloke that said that, the high up in NASA, he said, when it comes to issues of structural strength, that's a classic one in life, in business and whatever. You get a dramatic statement, dust can be dismissed. You put a caveat on it in issues related to structural strength. And once that's repeated a few times, the caveat is ignored. And that dust is dismissed is generalised to anything and everything to do with Apollo. And that's why I had such a terrible time, A, trying to get any measurements of it at all, and B, trying to get the measurements with my original invention. The official websites and many of the reports have got the dust issues wrong, which meant, for example, that the bravery of the astronauts, the sheer unmitigated bravery of them, stepping onto the unknown dust and working with it when it was the number one environmental problem, that's completely unknown or relatively unknown amongst the people who are celebrating.
How do you overcome the dust problem, Brian? Can you ever see it being able to be overcome?
The first one is very carefully, and the second question, yes.
How?
I don't know how. No, there are some things that are promising already, but you've got to test them on the moon. That's the trouble. Keep coming back to the unique environment on the moon. That's a solar wind plus raw sunlight plus vacuum, and the uniqueness of the lunar dust, which is its richness in chemical reactivity and its nanoparticles. I mean, that's tough country.